The first question comes from Andreas Venditti from Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my questions. Actually, I have quite a number, but I will limit myself to a few and then maybe ask a few more later. First one on the cash gate. I think you mentioned it, Robert. One of the challenges will be to maintain, obviously, as much as you can of the business. When you acquired, obviously, you said some volume losses will be normal. Can you be a bit more specific what you see there in terms of, you know, what the agents are doing, for example, and what that might mean for this year? Next one, in terms of the restructuring costs, I think 17 million remain. Will this be fully booked this year, or is there going to be also some in future years? Then maybe a smaller one on the sale of the rental guarantee business. Was there any significant impact on the numbers for last year? And maybe one for Volker, in terms of the expected loss, the change of the accounting to this, anything you can say already of any impacts? Thank you.
Okay, what we will do, I will take the cash gate question, I will also take the sales rental guarantee question, I give the restructuring costs to Pascal, and of course, Volker, you get the loss question as foreseen. So, cash gate, yeah, it's a good question, Andreas, also a difficult question. What you do is basically we combined all the brokers, all the agents into one channel and also all the dealers in one channel. And even, you know, the personal loan present for Cashgate is going to be a dual channel. On the agent volumes, I think it looks okay, but you don't know how aggressive competition is going to be and if you're going to lose something. We will lose something, you know, I'm pretty sure. It is impossible to say how much we're going to lose. On the auto side, we also will lose something. I'll give you one example. Tesla, for example, Tesla always works with two suppliers. That was Chambra and Cashgate. They have engaged with a second supplier, which is Banknow as well. So there are two suppliers again, which is completely in line with the European policy. The question is are we going to get 90%? Are we going to get 70%? Are we going to get 50% of that volume? It's difficult to say because it's the customer that's going to choose at the end of the day. So it's difficult to give you more color on this one. But we will lose some revenue, no numbers, unfortunately. Pascal, the restructuring.
Yep. So out of the remaining 17 million, we expect around two-thirds to be P&L impact in 2020 and then one-third for later.
On the sale of the rental guarantee business, there was basically no P&L impact in 2019. The reason we want to sell it is not a core business for us. It was a subscaled business line that we didn't think we could develop really significantly. So we sold it with no P&L impact in 2019. Volker.
Yeah, and on the question about the losses, I want to actually answer it in two directions. One is to give you an overview about what we expect for 2020, and one also kind of rather going into what I think you are after, more an insight about the accounting piece of it when it comes to expected losses going forward and what will change there. So on the 2020 loss performance, since we have been seeing over the last couple of years always a loss rate that is around 1%, we want to stay kind of consistent and prudent, and also for 2020 wouldn't expect any major moves because we haven't changed our credit risk appetite massively. There are always a few pieces that move up and down, but I think we have a robust estimate by saying that we will be in line with prior years. When it comes to the accounting piece and the expected loss concepts that are currently discussed, there was recently, a couple of months ago, an update from the Financial Accounting Stability Board in the U.S. that said that the implementation of the new U.S. GAAP rules around the CECL standard, that they are kind of postponed by 2 years. So for us, they first become effective in 2023. So it's far too early to give an update on what it means impact-wise for us. Because the FASB also kind of granted this extension period to give banks, especially small banks, the opportunity to monitor what now the larger banks are doing in terms of disclosure and reporting.
The next question comes from Flora Benhakoun from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I'll stick to just a few questions for now as well. The first question I wanted to ask is regarding the interest expense, which was a bit higher than expected here. And I just wanted to understand if this is kind of a one-off, you know, because of the maybe higher cost of the bridge facility that you had to quickly cover over the half year, or if we should consider that this is maybe a more normal number that we should also expect for the outer years. The second question is regarding the credit card fees. So I understand you've guided, you know, for a 5 million hit in 2020 from the lower interchange fees. Shall we still expect a small growth in credit card fees year on year, namely the number of new credit cards and transactions would slightly more than offset, you know, that negative on the interchange fees? Then a question on the SME lending. I think you have started already a little bit, so wanted to ask you how much you did and, you know, any commentary you have around your feeling having started with SME lending. And maybe as a last question here, if you could elaborate a little bit on what you intend to do, you know, on the card with Migros Bank. When do you think this is going to be launched and when this would contribute to the P&L? Thank you.
Thank you, Flora. You have a lot of questions for me, but the first one at least go to Pascal on the interest expense. So
clearly, as out of the 27.8 million interest expense, we had a few one-offs related to the bridge facilities, particularly as well the participation fees. But in total, look, so we disclosed in the funding part in the slides the reductions in the cost of funding for 49 basis points to 44 basis points. And I would say everything which is below 50% is always basically a very good numbers. So, yes, there are a few one-offs, and ultimately, although the cost of funding around 50, although slightly below, is a good number achieved in 2019, despite this one-off.
On the credit card fees, it's a good question. It's also not an easy question. Yes, we expect a 5 million hit, but also we're growing quite a lot on credit cards. I think you can expect growth on credit cards. I can't give you the number, of course, but you can expect growth. You won't see the growth, the big double-digit growth numbers anymore because of this. No, but I think if you look at the projection we have for the number of cards that we're going to do in the budget and in the number of customers we're going to sign up, I think you clearly can expect growth on the credit card fees again in 2020. Quickly on the SME lending, we did some friends and family, so we basically had the website open only for one partner to see and to just to get some experiences with the first applications. We did a few applications, we did a few numbers, they're not big numbers yet. I think it's early say because we are open now since Monday. We got quite a few applications in the first week. We work both through partners and through our own website, so we also have signed up quite some partners, some agents or brokers or whatever you call it, insurance companies who can bring us leads as well. And we also have a marketing campaign live now. So it's really early days. We booked a few contracts already in the system, so we have some volume in the system. I think at the half-year results, I can give you really some more flavor where we are. Your last question, Flora, on the microbank credit card. I think we're going to be live with Microbank at Q3, Q4 this year with the first product. That's basically as far as we see now what we can do. So you won't see a lot of impact in 2020. I think long term it's a pretty interesting value proposition because what we do is we're going to service the cards for a bank. So today we service cards for a retailer. So basically the assets in our book, the retailer is really our customer, the end customer is our customer. If you're going to service credit cards for a bank, the assets probably going to be on the book of the bank, and you're getting a service fee for basically servicing their credit cards. So that means that you don't need any capital to do this one, you get just services fee, but also lower margins on these cards because you don't have the assets, you don't have the interest expense on the assets as well. I think it opens a new market for us where we have been focusing on retail, and this really could bring us into the banking world. Let's see how this goes, but the first customer is there, and this is certainly something that we want to explore more in the future.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line from Michael Kunz from ZKB. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question regarding the Swiss Billing cooperation with a local search. Could you elaborate a little bit how that works in practice? Do the companies that look for an invoice financing find an advertising banner on the local search page, or kind of how do you bring the match together?
Yeah. Okay. Only one question, Michael. That's good.
I could add another one regarding the microbank cooperation. Is your ambition to kick out Viseca/Aduno completely out of the microbank, or do people get an option when they bank with microbank which card they want, or kind of how should that work in practice?
Okay, that's two questions for me, I guess. So first, the Swiss Billing local search deal. I think it brings Swiss Billing into a bit of a different league because it's not factoring anymore. It's basically billing services. So we're doing the whole billing and the collections for local search. It's not going to be immediately in the banner that say, no, go to check my business afterwards. But I think it gives us quite some addresses and some possibilities also to target customers from local search, which are the small SMEs. So basically what we're going to do is from, I think, the 1st of April now, we're going to do all the billing for them. It's not going to be big banners immediately, but I think it gives us access to quite a large customer base. And depending on how Chamber Business is going to develop, this could be another source of bringing leads in. The microbank cooperation, it's never my ambition to kick out somebody completely. I think what we want to do as microbankers, we want to bring a very competitive card, which also happens to benefit from all the micro advantages. So no annual fee, cumulus points, these kind of things. And I think micro is probably going to push the new customers to our card. I mean, that is probably what we want to do. What they do with the existing book, that's something completely to micro bank, and that's not really what we should look at.
Okay, thanks.
The next question comes from the line from Matt Nemes from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions, please. First one, perhaps for Robert. If you could give us perhaps a little bit of an outlook on the personal loan market and also on autos. In autos, you clearly had a very strong period with the 7% growth. How sustainable do you see that? Shall we expect some reversion to the mean, perhaps, or another good year in 2020? And in personal loans, did you think this trend of larger ticket sizes is still ongoing? And the second question for Pascal, in the context of the 575-605 guidance, I'm just wondering how shall we think about the cost base for 2020? I hear you on the integration charges, but perhaps excluding that bit, if you could give us a bit of sense how the cost base should develop, and also in the context of the somewhat higher D&A and the digitization program. Thank you.
So on the matter on the personal loan side, I think the trend of larger ticket size will continue clearly. You know, I think one of the reasons that we're putting Cascade Online in there is that we can target now with a different value proposition larger ticket sizes. Because today, until today, our pricing is 7.9 to 9.9, and the larger ticket sizes are clearly below that price, the real large ticket size. I think with Cascade Online, the customer have less service, but I mean they can have a better price, and we're not going to basically jeopardize the Chamber brand. So with Cascade Online, I think we can target this market a bit better, because clearly we see a trend moving into larger ticket sizes and pressure on margins. On auto, I think 7% growth on assets is amazing. Really, because normally you need to do a lot of volume growth to get asset growth in there, because you know that an asset for an auto asset is about 3 years on the book. So if you do 7% asset growth, that's quite a bit. So I don't think we can repeat the 10% asset growth. Also, you combine Chembra and Cascade in the auto book. So I can't tell you, I know what it is going to be in 2020, but I would be very surprised if you would have another 7% as it goes in 2020. Pascal?
Yep. So thank you, Matt. On the expense and the cost income ratio, so we disclose basically we reported the 48.3 as a percent of cost income ratio for 2019. And I think about the future, including Cashgate integrations, investments. So we also said that we expect the synergies realization from the transactions in 2021. And basically, we also expected then the P&L impact from these synergies in 2021, and we clearly also guided that we want by 2021 the cost income ratio around the 44%, ideally below the 44%. Well, I think as a 2020, although if you take 48.3 as what we reported 2019, 2021 as our target to 40, clearly as a 2020 as of this year, we still have the quite significant investments related to the one-off investments related to the acquisitions. So I would say it's more closer to the 48 than to the 44 in 2020.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
The next question comes from the line from Andreas Brun from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello. In personal loans, can you quantify the organic yield pressure in 2020? And then in credit cards, how fierce is actually the competition from fintech companies like, for example, Revolut? Lastly, we had that international interchange rate reduction in 2019. Was this the main reason that commission income per card did not grow anymore in 2019, and what are your expectations for the current year regarding commission income per card? Thanks.
Thank you, Andreas. At least you have a couple of questions for Pascal in here. The organic yield pressure, it's difficult to say now. I mean, we are now at a 7.5% yield on the personal loan side. Normally, I would give you quite a clear answer, but with the whole Cashgate integration, you know, and the whole new Cashgate online value proposition that we're going to have, it's going to be really difficult to talk about volumes and yields moving forward. I think we're well positioned. I think we will perform well. It is difficult to say because you will have some impact of Cashgate online. And if you get a lot of high ticket size, you probably get some high volumes, but then you get probably a bit of lower yield, or you get a bit of a higher yield and lower volume. So it's one or the other. It's difficult to give you more color around this one, honestly. And normally I would love to do it, but I don't really know the answer here completely. On the credit cards, on the fintech side, honestly, we don't feel it too much. I think if you look at our customer base is by large the micro customer. The micro customer is not a frequent traveler. I think the Revolut value proposition is very much. Revolut is the only one that you could feel a little bit. I think Revolut is the only one that is a frequent traveler customer. I don't think we see a lot of traction there at the moment. I think it will maintain the pressure on fees because I think everybody knows about this. But I don't think we lose a lot of customers there. So also, I think if you look at Revolut, the value proposition of Revolut is completely different than ours. We have a credit card. Basically, Revolut is still a prepaid debit card. And there's no asset there. There's no interest income there. So I think it's also a different value proposition there. In interchange, Pascal, you want to say a few words there?
So look, ultimately, yes, the lower growth that we have seen in the second half of the year is mainly driven by the lower interchange, the international interchange fees. Yes, that's the response here.
The next question comes from the line from Daniel Regli from Octavian. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Actually, my question goes a little bit in the same direction of one of the questions from Andreas. So, with risking that you give me the same answer, I was wanted to ask on the yield guidance. Obviously, as I understood you, you gave a yield guidance of being roughly stable at the current yields for 2020 versus 2019. And I was just wondering how this is possible, given that you have the whole Cashgate integration, which obviously is at the lower yield than your Cembra book now coming in for the full year if you just can give me some kind of idea
Let me give the question to Pascal. Maybe you get a different answer from me. I don't hope so, but I think it could be the same answer. But I give it to Pascal.
Now look, so ultimately, as we expect to be around 7.5 in 2020. I think it's also important to mention that in 2019, as what we report here, there were quite a few of the one-offs, the impact of the cash gate. Ultimately, although drivers are some one-off. So if we would exclude the cash gate, as I said before, the yield would be slightly higher than the 8%, which is exactly in line with what we said several times and for 2019. So excluding cash gate would be around 8, and now we expect basically with the cash gate integrations to go down to 7.5, and we mentioned several times ultimately as the cash gate portfolio as always the different profiles with lower pricing and to some extent lower risks.
I think it's a matter of either you do more volume and you do higher ticket size at lower yield, either you do basically higher yield and less volume, and I think we need to make that judgment every time that we speak. You want to see big difference in the yield. If the yield will go down a bit, you should see more volume, so to be compensated. Mm-hmm. And I think that is probably the judgment you have to make every time, and I think that also with the insecurity you see when you launch Cashgate Online, are you really able to attract at a pretty low cost base a lot of high ticket sizes, and you might give up a little bit on the yield, or are you not going to do it, and then you get a bit better yield and lower assets probably, but I think it should be quite neutral in there, honestly.
Okay, but just maybe to clarify the number you give on slide 97.5% on personal loans and auto leasing loans at 4.5. Are these exit yields or is this the average yield for the year?
These are the 2 points average yield. No
okay.
Adjustments.
Okay.
The next question is a follow-up question from Andreas Brun from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
One last question from my side. On page 11, you mentioned a timing effect from repayments in credit cards in December. Is this a recurring thing? And or could you elaborate on that point, please?
This is something for Volker.
Yeah, I mean, what we mean here by timing effect is that we see a pattern of our customers that they are typically paying on weekends, on Saturdays, when they go to the post office and kind of go with their invoice and pay the bill. Now, the December of 2019 was in such a case that people received their salary payments prior to Christmas, which gave them very much time, a lot of time to kind of go to the post office and repay, which obviously has been driving the repayments, very late repayments in the month, which then kind of leads to a slightly reduced asset base than we otherwise would have had. It's kind of rather around the timing of the calendar, what we mean by that.
Which doesn't have an impact on interest income because this is basically a part of the asset that don't yield any interest income.
Exactly.
But you see quite some, if you look month by month for the credit card assets, you see quite some fluctuation how the end of the month is basically, is the, you know, how it fits. And sometimes you see it going up a bit, sometimes going down a bit. I think for December, it was for the customer, a good month, and for us, probably not a good month because it fitted very well and they could do quite some repayments. And then you easily see 100, 200 million differences on credit cards, or 50 to 100 million differences of credit cards. Correct, Volker?
Yeah, it's rather around 50 million, I would say, because there is obviously also a stable base on interest-bearing assets. But you're absolutely right. Typically, the repayments are coming in on the interest-free asset side, so the transactors.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, so far there are no more questions.
So I would like to thank you for a very lively call. I think it's the first time in a couple of years that we used really the full hour. But I think the business is growing. It's getting more complex. A lot of things happened in 2019. We're looking forward to a great 2020, and thank you really for all your attention. Thank you, and bye-bye.